Hello, this is Ron Engelman from Krav Maga Israel. You're listening to the number one martial arts podcast in Germany. Support the guys via their Instagram or by sharing some of their episodes, and keep on fighting.
Ruf der Hyäne. Der Kampfsport-Podcast wird Ihnen präsentiert von Hyena Style Martial Arts, der Anbieter für Krav Maga in Gelsenkirchen.
My guest for today is known for his breakdowns. Not that mentally, though. I mean, his breakdowns on fake martial artists and dojos around the world. You guys may know him as Rob from McDojo Life. McDojo Life is a YouTube channel which shows videos about people who claim to be martial artists. And I mean, you have to watch this. Rob is a third-degree black belt in karate, purple belt in BJJ. He was also on the international martial arts team, Full Circle, and also has a lot of experience when it comes to martial arts and especially martial arts business. Today, I want to talk with him about his way into martial arts and the idea of starting this McDojo Life YouTube channel, maybe about some fake martial artists in general. Let's see. I'm a big fan of his work on his channel, and I'm thankful that he found the time to hang out with me. Ladies and gentlemen, Rob from McDojo Life.
What up, man? Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it. I always like talking shop. I will. So just to do a little note about what you just said about me finding time, this is what I do. So I've made two rules for myself when I started McDojo Life. We have about 800,000 followers worldwide right now between different social media platforms. But the two rules that I gave myself were I would do absolutely anyone's show who ever asked, and I would answer every direct message I was ever sent. And so I'm still working on that. My inbox is a nightmare, but I will still make the time to do anyone's show. I like talking shop.
Yeah, but not everybody thinks like this. I mean, I appreciate it. And I personally think you deserve more than this. I mean, this subscribers, you said 800,000?
Yeah, but like right now it's like 400,000, 422,000 on Instagram alone, and 200 something thousand on, Twitter or TikTok.
Definitely, you deserve more. I'm a big fan of this breakdown you do on these videos, dude. I know guys that are legit martial artists and they're kind of scared. Let's say they're a little bit intimidated for putting out videos on YouTube because of you, because they think they are wacky and finally ends up on McDojo Life. I mean, I found a guy, he's based in Germany, in the south of Germany. He ends up on your channel. So I know a lot of guys who are legit martial artists, but they say, no, I don't put a video up on YouTube.
Well, I think that most people probably misunderstand exactly what it is that I do, which is okay. It's understandable. Like, you know, the term McDojo has been around long before I ever started martial arts. And I've been at it for about 24 years now. And, you know, it basically has its own definition depending on who you talk to. But for me, I have five very specific rules for the page. I don't deviate from those rules. So as long as people basically aren't doing anything illegal or something that will get somebody hurt, they never have to worry about being on my page.
Great. About people doing stuff illegal, I have a great example, but we're going to come to that later. Before I start every episode, I got a quote. And I got a quote by Steven Seagal. And he said, "There was a time when I thought I was doing a good thing with good guys for a good cause. Looking back, I think I really wanted to be a warrior." Did he become a warrior? Is he legit right now? Or did he ever be...
I have another Steven Seagal quote just for fun. Steven Seagal was quoted as calling himself God, and the Dalai Lama also called him God. That's directly from Steven Seagal. So a man whose ego allows him to mention himself as being God is a little off. But also, I can't respect a man who has sexually assaulted and abused multiple women in multiple cases. I can't respect a man who has assaulted multiple actors on set simply because of his ego. I also have a hard time respecting a man whose belt line size is the equator. You know, I have a hard time listening to someone who talks about self-discipline in such a self-righteous way, who clearly has none. So is he a legit martial artist? I would say no. Can he fight? Well, I mean, the dude's 6'5". He's probably 300 and something pounds, if not more. You know, he's not a little man. So could he probably beat up most people? Yeah, I'm sure he can. People who don't train, or even people who are new. I mean, the guy has been doing it for a long time. But in terms of like martial artists, I think there should be more to it than just being able to beat people up. But that's just my opinion.
He's Russian now. Did you know it?
Well, I know that he is an ambassador to Russia through the United States, which is very weird.
Yeah.
You know, he's an actual government representative for the United States to Russia, which is crazy to me.
Yeah,
I guess read Putin likes him.
Putin likes him. And I read that Putin gave him the Russian citizenship.
Well, congratulations. Y'all can have him over there in Russia, by all means, please.
Talk about Russia. What's your thoughts on Sistema?
Sistema is a very weird thing because I've spoken with several people who are Russian, who had never heard of Sistema until they came to the United States, which I find very fascinating. There are obviously cults, I say cults right off the bat, being super disrespectful. There are groups of people who believe in this. And to me, I personally feel like it is a cult. I think that when you look at somebody like a Mikhail Rybak, you look at somebody like a Veselov, when you look at these two particular gentlemen who are the figureheads of Sistema, what I start thinking about is all the cognitive dissonance that is going on in people's minds. They have to come to some type of a thought in their mind where they have to go, is this real? Or I know it's fake, but I still continue to do it anyway, because if I go against it, then I'll be excommunicated. I'll no longer have this mentor. I'll no longer have these friends in the organization. I'll no longer be able to do the thing I like to do. And it's strange. Like, for instance, you look at somebody like a Mikhail, who was the figurehead of Sistema. He seems to me like he's probably somewhere between, you know, 5'8", 5'9". He looks incredibly overweight and out of shape. That could be medical, but it doesn't look good for a martial arts instructor to be that out of shape. But then, you know, you can almost let that stuff slide. You can say, you know what, maybe he is out of shape, but we don't know his life. We don't know his medical condition. So maybe it's something medical. But then you start seeing him do things like freeze a man on the ground without touching him. And the man says he can't get up. That's nonsense. Or, you know, he takes his body, he lays down on the ground flat, and someone puts their hands on his stomach and he flexes his stomach and shoots the guy back 3 feet. That's ridiculous. Or he's doing things like taking the Kozak whip and he's whipping his students with this sexual type whip thing. It's very weird, but it's not useful. It's not handy in any way to your training. Sistema is made up of a lot of drills, not necessarily a lot of technique. So when you see Sistema, you can go, oh, well, that's a lot of drills, but what are they for? And that's the big thing. When you do a drill, the drill should have a reasoning or a purpose behind it. When you have five guys putting their knives on your stomach and you turn in a circle and all of a sudden they're like, oh my God, I couldn't stab you. That's bullshit. You will get stabbed every time. So that is a useless, nonsensical drill. So to me personally, do I think all Sistema is nonsense? I don't know, because I haven't seen every Sistema instructor. But from the Sistema instructors that I have seen, the figureheads, the founders, the guys who are in charge, that's nonsense.
I mean, I know some Russian dudes, and you and I, we know Russians are strong and tough guys. And
sure.
I don't get it when I see those videos, especially those Sistema guys. You see one belly fat dude sitting on a chair and 20 people around him, and they all fall to the ground. I mean, even if you are new to this and you come to this class the first day and you see everybody's falling down, do you think this is a kind of a fear they got in their head and think, I have to fall down, I don't want to get this attention from all the other students and this master?
Well, I think it's like a what would be considered like a Stockholm syndrome, to where they have this person who's taking advantage of them and they are willing to go along with it because they think that person has their best interest in mind, when that's not true. You know, one of the claims to fame to Sistema is that they taught the Russian Spetsnaz, right? That's like the big claim to fame. What's ridiculous about that particular claim is every military teaches that, like, around the world, globally, every military brings in instructors from all kinds of different martial arts to teach them. So it'd be like me saying I started my own martial art, and because I've trained military before, that I can say I've trained special forces. Like, well, yeah, that's kind of true, but it's not like I was contracted out to do it. They were just guys who happened to be special forces that took the class, you know? And so, like, I'm sponsored, literally sponsored by a company called Killcliff, which is run by Navy SEALs. So for me to sit there and say, yeah, you know, I trained Navy SEALs before, would be ridiculous, because no, we have trained together. Like, but it's one of those things where that's a perpetuated nonsensical lie. And when I see these people, I really feel bad for them. I feel bad because I feel they're victims of a fraud, and they're so ingrained in the organization and the system that they can't take a step back and really think about it logically, like any other cult. And that's why I call it a cult.
Yeah. And you're right. And this is your channel. Your channel is to expose those frauds, those fake martial artists, those fake black belts, who claim to be some kind of great instructors and teaching people, I don't know, to save their lives in a dangerous situation on the street. I mean, the perfect example is those 5 minutes craft videos. I'm sure you know them, which he claims to be, we're going to show you in 2 minutes how you can save survive on a street fight, and they're showing these techniques, and everybody who trains martial arts knows, because you see the movement of the body, you see, no, he's never done this punch or jab in his whole lifetime. I mean, he's copying something he found on YouTube, but for me it's irresponsible to put these videos out, because someone sees that and remembers on the street, oh man, I saw this video on 5 minutes craft or on a short video clip. And I mean, people are not aware what can happen. It must be 10 or 12 years ago, it was a party here on the street, and a guy smacks another guy in the face, and he falls down, cracked his head on a concrete and died. I mean, that's the legitimate problem, which nobody understands and which nobody thinks of.
Yeah, there are two major lies in the martial arts industry that are perpetuated by people who simply don't know what they're talking about. And they're big lies, and they're very common, and you'll hear them all the time. One is size doesn't matter. That is a huge lie. And two, knowing something is better than knowing nothing. Those are giant lies that will get you hurt or killed. One, let's address the size doesn't matter lie, which is one of those things the 5 minute craft videos try to convince you, right? You have this 110 pound woman fighting this 6'4", 315 pound dude who only eats fucking steroids and weightlifts all day, right? And so you can tell that guy could probably hurt you. And then you have this little petite 100 pound woman, and then she hits a pressure point in his bicep and he falls over and gets hurt. No, that's not how that's going to go. What's going to happen is you're going to go hit that pressure point. That's not going to work because they don't work at all. And then all of a sudden the person's going to punch you in the face because now you're resisting. That whole, like, size doesn't matter is the strangest things to me, because every combat sport ever has weight classes. Why do combat sports have weight classes if size doesn't matter? Because it does. Even matters of 5 pounds matter. And then that's why weight classes are separated out, because they do matter. You know, even jiu-jitsu, you have open weight classes, don't get me wrong, but most divisions are by weight and experience level. So the thought of size doesn't matter is ridiculous. Would you rather be hit by a bus or a bicycle? I personally would rather be hit by the bicycle, not the bus. And so when you start thinking about it in terms of reality, it kind of goes away. That thought is just silly. But it's taught so much. The truth to that quote is size matters. It's just not the only thing that matters. Like, there are other things that matter: aggressiveness, height, weight, reach, the ability to have good technique, your understanding of adrenaline dump, how you handle your adrenaline, how you handle stressful situations, your ability to keep calm under pressure. All of those things matter, but size is in there as well. The other lie is knowing nothing, knowing something is better than nothing. That's bullshit. If I'm, let's say again, back in that situation, that 5-minute craft situation where this giant man grabs my purse and I use this one technique that will take down any assailant, which is a lie. And then all of a sudden I'm fighting for this purse and he punches me in the face and my head ricochets off the concrete and I die. Well, wouldn't me knowing nothing be better? Because then he just takes the purse and I'm still alive. You know, nothing in that purse is more valuable than your life. Nothing.
You're right.
So, okay, he took the purse. All right, cool. I'm still alive. But if you sat there and tried to remember this 5-minute craft or this weekend self-defense seminar course technique you only practiced once, guess what? You're putting yourself in danger for nothing other than the sake of your ego or someone else's lie. Just sometimes just knowing nothing is better than knowing a little bit of something that's going to get you hurt or killed. You know, and so I think that most people don't understand, on the internet at least, the people who have the lack of understanding of real martial arts and how it works. It's not something you can learn by just looking at a video online. It's not something that you can learn in a weekend. It's something that takes continual education and understanding, going against multiple people under stressful environments to really understand if something does or does not work for you. Because some things that work for you might not work for other people, you know, and that happens. Some people guillotine choke on point. They do it every time. Some people, they go for the guillotine choke. They fuck it up every time. Don't know how to finish. Well, in a street fight, maybe you shouldn't do that one. You know, do the one that you know, you know.
But why is it that people think they can fight? And you got those dudes that said, I'm going to punch him. I'm going to choke him out. They never did one martial arts class in his life, but they think they can fight. Why do you think people had this thought?
I think it's probably has a lot to do with ego, if I had to use a word to really describe it. I think people at their core don't want to feel weak and helpless. Mm-hmm. I think most people want to feel empowered. They want to feel strong. And even if they're not, it's so much easier for them to compensate for that failure by being loud. Animals do it in the animal kingdom all the time. Like, even animals have adapted to be able to be louder because they're scared. Like, for instance, like a rattlesnake. When you hear that rattle, you get scared, right? When you hear a shotgun rack, you get scared, right? Well, if they made a shotgun rack silent, it wouldn't be nearly as scary. But when you rack a shotgun and it's loud, you pee your pants a little bit, right? Animals do it all the time. Some snakes will rise up to become taller. Bears do the same thing when they're scared. They will rise up on their hind legs and try to stand up tall because they're scared. Now, granted, those things could hurt you and kill you, but humans are no different. We do the same thing. We have the same mannerisms as animals. Like, for instance, a lot of humans, whenever they get angry, we get louder. It's natural because we're scared. We don't want to, you know, if we were calm, that's really scary to me. Like, I know that guy's not bullshitting because he's really calm. You know, that's a terrifying thing. But most people don't think that way. Most people think, oh my God, they're being really loud and aggressive. That scares me. They're getting really close to me and getting really tall and puffing their chest out. That's nothing different than what animals do. It's what a scared animal does. It tries to intimidate whatever the other thing is that it feels threatened by. And so I don't think that it's anything new. I just think it's something that's ingrained in our DNA to not want to feel weak. The only problem is that when you start adding on top of that people's ego, you start adding on top of that people's mental disorders, people's past, their histories, you know, their lack of self-control, then things start to go into the direction of, okay, well, I really believe it now. I'm not just yelling because I'm scared. I'm yelling because I've lied to myself so much over the years that I actually think I can fight when I've never formally trained in it a day in my life. No, by the way, just to add to that, no other job works that way. You know, you would never, if you had never worked on a car before, you would never go up to the car and be like, I got this, and just start working on the car. If you were if you've never done open heart surgery before, you would never just walk in off the street and go, you know what? Hand me those instruments. Let's do this. Yeah. You know, but like, for some reason, fighting is a thing that people inherently want to feel like they can do. It's the dumbest thing in the world. It's funny. Like, but those are people who would get themselves or others hurt because of their ego.
Do you remember the show back in the MTV days? I mean, I guess it was the MTV days.
Bully Beatdown.
At Bully Beatdown?
Yeah.
This was hilarious. Yeah,
that was Mayhem Miller, and that dude's in jail right now. Hopefully he'll get out again. He can't stay out of trouble, man. I like the dude, but he can't stay out of trouble.
And that show was hilarious.
Yeah, man, I love that show. It was, yeah, but there was a lot of people on there who damn sure couldn't fight. Yeah, thought they could, and they were getting worked.
When did you start with martial arts?
When I was 12 years old. So I'm 36 now, about to turn 37. So I'm almost about to hit that 25 year mark in the industry. 25 years. That's a long time. I'm old.
When I invite people to talk with me about their journey through martial arts, 90% of them telling me they started with karate, judo, and idols like Bruce Lee or Jean-Claude Van Damme. Back in the days in Germany, when I remember, I was born 78. So in the 80s, we don't have much right here. We had karate, we had judo, maybe kung fu, boxing, kickboxing, that's it. And we didn't have much back in the days. How was it in your era?
Well, you know, I started in the 90s. So, you know, that wasn't, I guess, too terribly long ago, 25 years, you know, but at the end of the day, you know, by that time, you know, martial arts was very popular here in the United States. Jiu-jitsu wasn't nearly as popular because UFC hadn't started yet. UFC started in 93. And then I had started in karate, and which is basically like the version of karate that I started in was a freestyle karate. So it was glorified kickboxing, more like Joe Louis style karate, not like Kia style karate, you know. It's not strip mall karate, but it was different for me. Like when I started, the very first class I ever took was a Dojo Storm, which was very weird. If anybody's not familiar with what a Dojo Storm is, it's basically when one martial arts school challenges another martial arts school to fight. And the first day I actually showed up for my first class, you know, I'm a 12-year-old kid, I'm excited, I've never done this before, and I go into the class and I sit down. And then all of a sudden, like the instructor walked over to me and goes, introduces himself, was a really nice guy, was my mentor and instructor for a very long time. His name was Lee Barden. He passed away about 2-3 years ago now, rest in peace. And he introduced himself. He was very polite. And then he just let me know, hey, I'm sorry, there's no class today, but you're more than welcome to stay and watch. And I was like, oh, well, my mom had already dropped me off and then went. So I was like, I'll just stay and watch and see what's going on. And then another school came in. It was like really tense. Like nobody was yelling. Everybody was really formal and polite, but man, you could tell that.
But this lesson was planned. I mean, this dojos, they knew.
Oh yeah. The other yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So my instructor apparently, and the other instructor had gotten into an argument the weekend before at some martial arts tournament. And then my instructor at the time had invited him to come in and bring his students. And so they did. So it wasn't like just out of nowhere. They definitely did plan it. And, man, they commenced to it was basically just kickboxing. Back then at the dojo I trained at, we did not have mats. So it was literally on carpet, and underneath the carpet was concrete. And they just beat the crap out of each other for like an hour, hour and a half. And it was really eye opening because it was a Wing Chun school. And the school that I had, the school that came in was a Wing Chun school. And then the school that I was participating in was a karate school. And so it was a lot more geared towards kickboxing. But the Wing Chun guys were tough. Don't get me wrong. Like those guys had participated in local fight nights and boxing and kickboxing matches. So it wasn't like they did not compete outside of their art. And it was really eye-opening to see like techniques being thrown in a fight because I was a child. So the only reference that I had was either TV, which at the time there was no real realistic martial arts on TV, or fights that you see between children. And so all the fights that I'd seen between children definitely didn't have any technique, you know? And then all the fights that I'd seen on TV were so unrealistic, you know, like the whole Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon type movie, you know, it's like, that's not real. But then when you watch these guys fight, it was like a mixture. It was like, oh, okay, well, some of this works when done right timing, you know, right way. And some of it's just not working at all and people are getting punched in the face. And it was just a really cool experience. And then my next class, I started and loved it and enjoyed it. But, you know, back in the day, it wasn't like it is now. I think we're going through this beautiful martial arts renaissance where since 1993, every martial art has felt the urge and the need to step up their game for more realistic approaches to what they're doing. And it stands out now. It's night and day. How karate guys fight now is not the same way karate guys fought back in the day. there's been an evolution. You guys got like GSP, who's Kyokushin karate black belt. You have Raymond Daniels, you have Stephen Thompson, you have Michael Venom Page, all basically sport karate guys who are able to transfer that in to actual combat when it matters. Then, you know, the same thing with jiu-jitsu now. Jiu-jitsu has evolved so much since 1993. I mean, you have now combat jiu-jitsu, which is like open hand slapping with jiu-jitsu. So giving them an opportunity to have a stepping stone to going into MMA. There's this beautiful renaissance that's going on, and we're in it. We're in it, and it's beautiful. You can see martial arts evolving drastically and quickly to keep up with reality. And a lot of that, I have to say, you could probably thank the UFC for. You know, if it wasn't for the fact that all these arts got tossed in and the public got to see and witness these different arts fighting each other, I don't think the evolution would have been as quick or as impactful, you know?
Yeah, but did the evolution begin because of the UFC?
In my opinion, I think the Renaissance era that we're in, again, this is my opinion, I think the Renaissance era that we're in did. I think it was directly impacted by that. And if you look at as an example, if you look at the ebb and flow of how martial arts is in pop culture, it typically goes in very, very serious stages. So you have entertainment martial arts. Usually once martial arts becomes popular in entertainment, then it becomes popular in fitness. So then martial arts becomes a fitness thing again, because that's how you bridge the gap between people who have never trained to people who want to train. Typically, you don't go, oh, I really like that movie. I want to learn how to kill people with my hands now. Most people don't do that. Most people go, okay, I'd like to get involved, but I want to dip my toe in the water. So how do I do that? So they go to the Billy Blank's Tai Bo, or they go to the cardio kickboxing class, or they do that just to dip their toe in. That's the majority of people, because the majority of people, even ones who train in legitimate martial arts, never compete. I'd say 75% of people who do martial arts never compete a day in their life because they don't want to fight people. And then after, you know, you get a popularity again, then you have these guys who have that, you know, speaking out against bullshit. Then all of a sudden it becomes, what's effective? Does that really work? And then, of course, you'll get a whole bunch of people to join what really works again. And so it typically goes that way. And by the way, right now, if you really count the way that's going, entertainment martial arts is back again. John Wick. You have Shang-Chi from Marvel, you know, some martial arts is popular in entertainment. So you know what's going to be next? It's going to be back into the exercise realm. People are going to learn how to exercise the martial arts again. And then we'll go right back to the reality of things. It's just how it goes.
It's interesting because after Taekwondo, I started my karate career. And a good friend of mine, he lives 2 streets away from me. He is now 6 dan in Shotokan karate. And he tells me that when it starts with the UFC and MMA becomes more popular here in Europe, in Germany especially, the karate schools got more, it was a struggle for them. It was a struggle for them to gain more students. And now after this Cobra Kai Netflix era, he realized now it's growing up. I mean, little children comes and wants to learn the karate thing. And I mean, Cobra Kai, this Netflix series, did you saw it? It's
I love that show.
I love that show, but it's terrible to see how they threw a kick or painful.
The technique isn't good, but I like the story.
The story is
nostalgia. You know, I grew up, no doubt. You know, the Karate Kid when you're a kid is awesome. And
so these dojo storms you was mentioned before, is that common in the United States? I never heard that here.
Not as much as it used to be. Like back in the day, like in the 70s and the 80s, it was popular literally because of movies. Like people watched like Bruce Lee, dojo. I forget. I think maybe it was Big Boss or something like that, where he actually like dojo stormed an entire dojo by himself.
Yeah.
He like
says these old Eastern kung fu movies.
Yeah, like it's like the old school kung fu narrative. You know, you've beaten my master. I must challenge you. Like that's such an old school mentality. It's funny, but you know, like people really bought into that. As a matter of fact, because of the Kung Fu era, nunchucks in the United States became illegal in most states, which is crazy. Now they're only illegal in like 1 or 2 states. But still, like, so many people were carrying nunchucks because of Bruce Lee. They had to make them illegal. How crazy is that? You know, entertainment sometimes will spill into reality a little too much. And I think that's probably why you get a lot of these fraud martial artists getting away with it. It's because people love the entertainment side, and they kind of think, well, maybe that's true. There might be something behind that, when there's really nothing true about it.
So you said 24 years you're in the martial arts game, and suddenly you realize, wait a minute, there's a lot of frauds out there. So then it became from an idea to the YouTube channel McDojo Life, right?
Well, not exactly. So, I mean, I guess throughout the years, anyone who's been in the martial arts industry for a long enough time has seen some nonsense. And it doesn't really take long to see nonsense. I mean, if you just go to any local martial arts tournament, you'll always see that one guy where you're like, he probably shouldn't be here. Like, you're going to get hurt, my friend. Like, that's not good. And I've seen that happen way too many times. But, you know, what really kind of started it was a conversation I had. I had a conversation when I was instructing Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. I was a four-stripe blue belt, maybe, or maybe less. But I was working the front desk. I was helping with the kids' classes. I wasn't the head instructor. We had several black belts who did that. But the instructor at the time who was supposed to do the class, he was sick. I know he was sick because that dude never called out. But he was sick. He called me. He's like, hey, man, can you do me a huge favor? Can you just teach these guys armbar, triangle choke, transition between the two, and then let them spar? And I was like, yeah, for sure. I taught in the noon class, which I love teaching, by the way. It's like my favorite pastime. And then afterwards, because it was a noon class, most of those guys didn't work. So we were all just having a conversation, you know, everybody's getting ready to leave. And we got on the subject of McDojos, and we talked about it for a while, and then everyone left except for one guy. One guy stayed behind just a little bit, and he waited for everyone to leave. And he walked up to me and he said, hey, man, I'm a little embarrassed, but it was only his second class ever. So he had no martial arts training. He did his trial class, and this was his first class as an official student. And he goes, what's a McDojo? He goes, I heard you guys talking about it, but I don't really understand or get it. And I explained to him now what's kind of become the basis of the five rules of the page. And he goes, well, how come nobody does anything about that? And then I started thinking about it, and I was like, well, there is no regulating body for all martial arts. It doesn't exist. And then I was thinking, like, well, why doesn't anybody do anything about that? So, like, that night, I couldn't stop thinking about it. I couldn't sleep. It was really weird. And I was like, damn, like, I was processing, like, well, why is that? And then the next day, I started a Facebook page, which was McDojo Life at the time. And that did okay. I was doing these long, like, essays, basically about frauds in the martial arts. No one was reading them. And no one was interacting because I was talking too damn much on them. Like, I said all the information, so there was no room for input. Then I realized one day I just like posted up a funny video, and then I just moved on because I didn't have time to write the essay. But when I came back, it had more views, more likes, more comments, and I had more followers than I did before. Yeah. And I was like, huh, well, maybe there's something there. Maybe if I don't approach this so seriously, maybe if I just gently poke and make jokes about it, that more people will pay it attention. And then it just blew up, man. Like, before that Facebook page was taken down, we had over 100,000 followers. And now we have a new Facebook page up, which has like 2,000 because I just was able to get back on. But, you know, Instagram, 400,000, TikTok, 200 and something thousand, our YouTube, over 57,000. Like, people really want to talk about these things. The problem is that the martial arts industry takes itself so seriously that everyone argues about these conversations. You know, how long it should get belt, how long it should take to get a belt. People argue. Who's better? People argue. Is your martial arts school good? People argue. No one has open, honest dialogue conversations in a productive way. But through the page, ironically enough, by making it kind of more humorous, more people are engaging and having these serious conversations because it doesn't seem so serious. We can kind of joke about it, you know, but then it allows this beautiful area where I can call out pedophiles. I can call out frauds. I can call out people who are seriously injuring or killing children. I can call out these nonsense martial arts practices. And it stands out when I do, because most every day it's funny, 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 pedophile. Then people go, oh shit.
Dude, and every week I see that you post something about pedophile. It's intense. It's so much
let me just, funny enough that we're on the subject about content, I just want you to, so I do news stories. I do McDojo news, which is, you know, I do breakdown videos about people, but I also try to cover these news stories. And I just want you to read the news stories that I have to choose from on doing my news. Female martial art expert beats alleged sexual harasser. That actually happened. She had to choke a guy out on a public bus because he was trying to grab her boobs. Former professional MMA fighter stabbed a builder in Luton. Ex-UFC fighter Bubba McDaniel arrested on deadly conduct charges after allegedly road rage. He shot at a car. Martial artist attacked left man bleeding brain. So this guy hit someone so hard, he left that guy's brain bleeding. Family of five-year-old battling a rare type of cancer. This little kid has cancer. It's a rare type of cancer, which is he's only five, and they can't find a bone marrow match to help him. So that's another story. Martial artist thought to have heard a stranger talking shit about him, so he knocked him unconscious. Heroic trio saves man's life after his heart stopped, which is a heart attack in a martial arts school. Those are just some news stories from yesterday. That's just one day. Now, the pedophile thing is something that happens almost every week. You can look it up. And I think what that has to do with is, one, pedophiles are always going to try to go to jobs that are going to involve children. The martial arts industry in itself isn't actually childcare. That's not what martial artists labeled as. So they can kind of get away with it. There's a guy named David Arnbeck, who was a high-level jiu-jitsu black belt, and he molested a 15-year-old girl in his home, in his house. That 15-year-old girl came over to have a sleepover with his daughter. He was drunk, molested that girl. Then that girl ran home, told her parents, and this guy pled guilty. He pled guilty to raping this girl, sexually assaulting that girl, right? Which I still consider rape. And he still owns three martial arts schools today. Because of the plea deal he took, he was not put on a sex offender registry and is still allowed around children. It is something that is horrendous in the martial arts industry. There's a story about Dojo Pizza, which was a school, I do believe, in New York. If I'm wrong with the state, I apologize. But this dude ran a martial arts school and pizzeria. So inside his martial arts school, he also had a pizzeria. And that's why it's called Pizza Dojo. And he would take these underprivileged children off the street and allow them to eat at his facility and train there for free. People thought this dude was a saint. They thought that was the best thing in the world that he could ever do. He was convincing the parents of these underage children to allow him to adopt the children. And he did. They signed over parental rights to him, thinking that he was going to give them a better life. All meanwhile, he was molesting all of these children, taking videos and photos of them, keeping them on his computer and distributing them. And the only reason he even got caught for it, because people thought he was such a saint, was because the building was in poor condition and someone reported the building. No one even knew he was molesting these kids right in front of their face. It is a humongous problem in the martial arts industry. And meanwhile, what pisses me off is people decide that they're going to nitpick and be mad about the stupidest, pettiest bullshit in the martial arts industry. Oh, that guy got a black belt in 2 years. Who fucking cares? Who cares? No one gives a shit. Do you know why? Because we have bigger problems. We have pedophiles. We have children dying. There was a kid who got thrown in his second judo class ever. He got thrown so many times that he was put in a coma and eventually died. His martial arts instructor did that to him. And meanwhile, people give a shit about the stupidest stuff. Let's be honest. The martial arts industry needs to be cleaned up. And it's not what people think. Who cares how much that person charges across the street? If that's what you're worried about, you're a shitty human being. If you're worried about how long it takes that guy to get a black belt, you're a shitty human being. Why? Because at the end of the day, you're worried about the stupidest shit while children are being molested, children are being killed, adults are being defrauded, and people are learning shit that will literally get them killed or hurt. So the martial arts industry is a little fucked up to me because they always worry about the stupid things and don't ever address the real major issues.
After all these years, I guess it's been a decade now. You started with Dojo, McDojo Life. Did you ever get information from these people, especially from those pedophiles you put up? Did you ever get...
Yeah, that's why I do the breakdowns. Like, I have information about all those people. When I do the breakdown...
And how are they doing? How are they doing after that?
Well, it depends. Like, for instance, there was a school that I called out in South Africa. And What's really crazy, by the way, is what I do is international. So I kind of don't really sleep. like the world doesn't stop. The sun is up in some part of the world all the time. And so while people are waking up, I'm like, man, I'm tired. And then all of a sudden I'll get a story and I'm like, fuck. I'm like, all right, well, I guess I got to do the story. But like there was a story in South Africa where this gentleman didn't have a black belt in jiu-jitsu. And he was giving out black belts in jiu-jitsu, which you can't do because you can't give away something that you didn't earn yourself. His students, he fooled his students for over 25 to 30 years. That's how long he was able to keep this lie going. And then finally, he sent out a 4-page memo because of some internal issue that they had, basically cussing out all of his students, telling them that he was going to take away their belt rank and demote them. And I was like, you can't do that. you couldn't give it to them to begin with. And now you're trying to take it away because your ego was hurt. But that guy wound up having a school shut down after all the things, all the lies that he had told, because that wasn't the real issue. The real issue was like he was claiming that he was a part of the North American Grappling Association, which he wasn't because he was in South Africa and they don't have a South African division. He was holding tournaments saying he was with them, which you can't, because you can't have that affiliation, doesn't work that way. You know, it was very strange how many lies he was telling, but that school got shut down. You know, I got my first death threat was because of calling out a pedophile. So the first death threat I ever got, I guess you could say serious death threat. I get threats all the time, but fuck them. The first major death threat I got was when I was in London. So I'm in London. Someone hired me for a martial arts seminar. I was like, sure, I'll go out there. So I went out there for 2 weeks. It's a long plane ride. So I was like, I'm going to stay for a week or two. When I got out there, I had a good time, taught the seminar. And then that weekend rolled around that I was supposed to be leaving on the Monday. They said, hey, would you like to come to a Taekwondo tournament our school is going to be competing at? We'd love for you to be there. And I was like, sure. So I went there on the Saturday. I'm there and it's a massive tournament. I mean, it's huge. There are literally thousands of people there. I was like, this is awesome for like a local tournament. This is huge. This is great. And, you know, I grew up doing those kind of tournaments. So I loved like that atmosphere and the competition and all that. So as I'm sitting there, I start checking my messages because I got to keep up with it. And then all of a sudden I got a message from someone who had just made a profile. They had no posts, followed no one, and no one was following them. No profile picture. But what was weird was they sent me a message only saying what I was wearing. That was it. And I was like, that's weird. So like, I'm looking around the room and there's thousands of people here. I was like, there's no way I'm going to be able to know who this person is. And sometimes it's weird. I don't get it, but maybe it's something that I have to understand as time goes on. Sometimes people will like talk to me and they'll be like, yo, I saw you at the tournament, man. I love your stuff. And it's like, well, why didn't you come talk to me? I'd be happy to talk to you. So I thought maybe it was one of those things. So I sent him the person a message. I'm assuming it's a him based off of how they were speaking. And I sent him a message and I said, hey, man, you're more than welcome to come over and we can chit chat and talk. And then it got real weird because he started sending me basically an explanation of why he hated me, because I got a martial arts school shut down in London, technically twice. And the incident that he was talking about was I got made aware when I had my Facebook page originally up that there was a martial arts school that had a convicted pedophile in it, but he had changed his name and opened up the school anyway and just hadn't been caught. And so I researched and found out that that was the guy. I put that information out there on her Facebook page and people went there and started doing 1-star reviews on his businesses and all that stuff, letting people know he was a pedophile. Well, that school shut down pretty much immediately after that. And so I got a school shut down. Good, good. He shouldn't be around children. Well, apparently that guy had moved. And I didn't hear about this for another year or two, but he moved to London and changed his name and opened another martial arts school. Well, I'm sitting there and all of a sudden I get a message and it says, hey, isn't this the guy you called out a few years ago about being a pedophile? And I was like, holy shit, that is the guy. That is the same guy. Did the same thing, put the information out there. People went over to his pages, 1-star reviewed, started going in his comment sections, letting people know that he was a convicted pedophile, putting up the proof. And then that school got shut down. Well, the message that I received in that tournament was from one of his students that thought I was lying. I was like, dude, I didn't lie. Like I had proof. Like there's a reason I haven't been sued. You know why I don't get sued? Because I tell people the truth. That is true. He did those things. And so the guy let me know that he was going to shoot me when I left the tournament. And it was London. So I highly doubt he had a gun. But I'm from America, and I know how easy it would have been for me to get a gun there. It would have been not that hard, to be honest. And so I was like, that's a little weird. So, and even if it wasn't that, maybe he was going to stab me or try to injure me or hit me with a car. I don't know. But I went over to the local police that were there. They were there for the tournament. Most tournaments have these police officers who are off duty to help. And I let them know the situation. They told me there's nothing they could do about it. But whenever the tournament was over, they could walk me to my car. And so that was like the first real threat, but that was directly because of getting a school shut down. And so, you know, you can make a difference, man. Speaking out really does help. It really does do things for the community.
That was my question. I actually wanted to ask you if you ever got some death threats. I mean, surely you got some death threats even in Europe. I think it's the most important work, even for me as a father. I mean, I got two kids. I couldn't imagine you pay some respect. You respect some guy who's working with children, and you hope you're not even beware or even think about that he's gonna assault your child. And the work you did is great.
Well, I appreciate that, man. Like, you know, it's a very strange job because I'm not going to say I'm the only one who does it. There are definitely more people now in the environment.
Xu Xiaodong, you know him?
Xu Xiaodong in China. He does it a lot differently than I do it. Xu Xiaodong, in case anyone doesn't know, in China is the gentleman who literally fights fake martial artists in full contact matches. And those people are so deluded, so out of their mind, they actually agree to fighting a legitimate martial artist. And he usually knocks him out within the first minute. But that guy, I really hope that they make a movie about his life, man, because he is what would be considered Ronin. He is a modern day Ronin, a masterless samurai. He's doing what Miyamoto Musashi did back in the day. You know, he's going from town to town and challenging these people to duels and fighting them and winning easily, usually within the first round. And he usually looks very bored when he does it, you know. But the Chinese government right now is ostracizing Xu Xiaodong. Did you know, because of Xu Xiaodong, in China, it is illegal now. You are no longer legally allowed to call yourself master unless you got approval from the Chinese government because of Xu Xiaodong.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's crazy. Go look up the article, man. When I heard about it, I was blown away. But he was beating up so many of these frauds. The Chinese government doesn't like him specifically because Kung Fu is a major export in China. Kung Fu was a big part of their culture. And, you know, him beating up these frauds is not making them look good, to say the least.
I heard a story about him that the Chinese government told him, yeah, you can compete, but you have to wear a clown mask.
Well, he has to wear clown paint.
Yeah.
So he actually does have a fight. And, you know, our version of clown in the United States is different than a version of clown in China. But he does have to wear the clown makeup when he fights. And he actually did take a fight where he's wearing the blue and white clown makeup, which is funny because over here in the United States, the State Athletic Commission would never let that fly. They'd be like, no, you can't wear paint when you fight, you moron. But over there, the government hates him. Also, another thing that the government did to him was over there, you have something called a social credit score. Over here in the United States, we don't have that. It's kind of a joke. But over there in China, a social credit score means a lot. Where you can go, where you can live, if you're allowed to leave the country, all that stuff. And what's crazy is they dropped his social credit score to like a D. So he's no longer allowed to ride the high-speed train. I don't think he's allowed to live in certain housing communities. He's not allowed to leave the country. And right now, China isn't even allowing anyone to renew passports, which is funny because he was supposed to fight a guy named DKU. And I have long since believed that DKU has kind of been a fraudster. Because he's a systema and practitioner, but he claims that he's a master of like 12 different martial arts, and he tries to be the next Bruce Lee, or he compares himself to Bruce Lee a lot, even though Bruce Lee was never a fighter, never fought on a stage, boxing, kickboxing, any of that. Not saying anything bad about Bruce Lee. I'm just saying if you're going to try to be a fighter, you should probably compare yourself to another fighter. But you know, DKU has been using Xu Xiaodong's name to literally lie about a fight that he's supposed to be having. DKU has said he's going to be fighting Xu Xiaodong, but that's impossible. One, Xu Xiaodong's passport's expired. And two, Xu Xiaodong can't get a new passport because China is not issuing new ones. Meanwhile, DKU is still lying, saying he's going to fight Xu Xiaodong. And it's supposed to be December 4th, but I promise you. And even DK, Xu Xiaodong himself said he is not going to be at that fight. So he himself said he wasn't going to be there.
Did you ever get in contact with Xu Xiaodong?
Sometimes. The hard part is like Xu Xiaodong doesn't actually speak English. Okay. DKU speaks English. DKU likes to pretend he doesn't speak English because he has a translator. I have seen that dude speak English a ton of times. He speaks perfectly good English. But Xu Xiaodong, on the other hand, I can kind of get, I kind of keep up with him through fight commentary breakdowns. I don't know if you follow that page or not. But there's a guy there named Jerry Liu, and Jerry Liu speaks Chinese, and he's able to translate and kind of keep people informed. And that's pretty much how I keep up with what's going on with Xu Xiaodong, is through fight commentary breakdowns. So it's a good channel. Keeps you up with a lot.
I mean, it's he's also doing an important work. And I would love to see, you said it in the beginning. No, it was before we get into the recording here. You are making a documentary, the McDojo Life documentary. How it's so far going?
Well, we actually filmed it already, 100% done. Okay. We had a great time filming it. I tried so hard to make the documentary feel like the page feels. Like, I wanted people to look at it and know that it was nonsense, learn a lot, but at the same time, understand the gravity of what's going on. So I wanted people to laugh as they were learning something. But we had such a good time. It was 3 months straight of filming. We filmed for 3 months straight. We were able to get...
But only in the United States, or...?
Well, yeah, because we only had like a $20,000 budget. That was all like crowdfunded. but right now we're in distribution phase. So right now we're trying to see if someone will buy it as a 5-part series. And then on top of that, we're trying to see if they would allow us to give us a bigger budget to go worldwide with it, because I'd love that. I'd love to just go from country to country, state to state, and meet these frauds in person and call them out in person and do experiments like a real scientist would, not like just some asshole who just wants to fight people. I want to prove them wrong. And you can't necessarily prove one technique is wrong by fighting someone. What you do is you make a real experiment. You say, okay, how about this? We'll take your technique. You think you can knock somebody out with your mind. All right, cool. Or your chi. Well, how about this? We'll take 5 martial artists from different height, sizes, weights, and backgrounds. And we'll take 5 people who are not martial artists, and we'll see if you can knock them out with your chi. Doing experimentation is what really will help, because the martial arts industry thinks that the answer to everything is just beat people up. Just beat them up, fight them. That doesn't actually prove anything. Are we going to say that just because Anderson Silva lost a fight that he's not one of the greatest of all time? That doesn't really do the job justice. What we really do is do real experiments. Like, hook these people up to machines. Let's try to see if these techniques work against people who are untrained. Let's try to see if they work against people who are trained. Now, will there be confrontation? Oh, yeah. Like, you can't avoid that. Am I willing to fight these people over that? You're damn right I am. But is that how I want to approach it? No, I'm an adult. I don't need to answer all my questions with this. You know, we can answer it in a more adult-like way.
You need to get in contact with the Joe Rogan Experience. I mean, he's a big fan of your work.
And yeah, you know what's weird?
Yeah.
Is like... I get it. I completely 100% understand, by the way. Joe Rogan is like upper echelon of celebrity. People around the world know him and respect his thoughts, ideas, opinions, because I think that he allows for open dialogue, which is very rare nowadays. People in the United States, at least, are extremely sensitive now about everything you say. And if you don't say it just the way they would have said it, then they don't want to talk to you at all. But yeah, Rogan
has cancel culture.
I fucking hate it. I really do.
Yeah, me too.
And I think that open dialogue is so important. Even if you don't agree with somebody, that's okay. I'm friends with people that I don't agree with on certain subjects, and we're still friends. You don't have to dismiss someone completely.
Because you have to stay in dialogue with the other person.
Exactly. Because that's how we learn. That's how we grow. Because usually in between these two opinions is the truth. And one person thinks they have the truth and the other one thinks they have the truth. But the truth is in the middle. When the dialogue starts, that's when you really start learning about each other. You could respect someone more who stands up for their opinion and isn't worried about you saying something they don't agree with. And they're not going to just put you down because of it. they're going to really open up and talk to you. So I think that's why people respect him. But on top of that, he is a fan of the page. I'm very fortunate in the fact that he has mentioned it several times. And I'm grateful that anyone, by the way, gives a damn about what I do. But when he mentions it on the show, it is impactful. It does mean something to me because that means one of my peers is acknowledging that I'm doing work that's helpful. I like that. But at the end of the day, he is a celebrity. He is one of those people that I would imagine probably keeps a lot of distance and space from people he doesn't necessarily know personally. He's done great things for me, by the way. He got me tickets to the Izzy Adesanya versus Kevin Gastelum fight, which is the fight of the year, like 2 years ago. I was like third row. It was incredible. And he did it just to be nice. Like it was my birthday. He was just like, here's tickets. I was like, dude. But at the end of the day, I do respect his distance that he keeps. And I also respect the fact that anytime that you talk to a celebrity, I'm sure that what the celebrity thinks is, what do you want from me? Like, and that's not something I want to be labeled as. I don't want to be labeled as someone who knows him because I'm asking him for things. So I keep that distance. He knows I exist. He knows what I do. If he wants me on the show, obviously if he reached out, I would shit my pants and I'd be like, fuck yeah, I'll be on the show. But at the end of the day, man, that's up to him. And so I don't like.
It's a humble thought from you. It's a humble thought, but I think your work is so important that you have to claim, you have to use whatever you got to get these other people worldwide to get these other people to know what's the word I'm looking for.
You know, I'm actually really impressed with your English because you told me you were worried about your English. And this is the only time I've heard you stammer. Like your English is great, dude. Your English is better than most people. So it's good.
It's been a while since I talked to someone in English. But no, I mean, you have to do everything you can. My opinion, that to inform other people what's your work. So you mentioned before you got 400,000 followers on Instagram. I mean, the Joe Rogan Experience is way much more. And
oh yeah, for sure.
Some people listen. I listen to the Joe Rogan Experience from people I never knew in my life before. It's informative. No, informative. I don't know this word.
Informational. Well, I mean, you know, one thing that I've kind of taken to heart, and I think it's a Will Smith quote. If I'm wrong, I'm sorry, but that's what I remember it from. But if you're going to build a house, you don't do it like the whole house all at once. You lay a brick at a time. And so when I get up every day, I post every day. I post Thanksgiving, I post Christmas, I post New Year's, I post every day because I believe that if I keep laying the brick, that eventually I'll have a castle. And I think right now I have a decent room, you know, I think I've made enough, you know, and so I think that, you know, right now it's more than it was before and tomorrow it'll be more than it was the day before and so on and so on. And you know, I think it's great to be able to have these people who are supportive, like Michael Bisping has mentioned it on his show. And who else, you know, fuck, hold on. Your Mom's House, the podcast, Your Mom's House with Tom Segura, you know, they've mentioned it a few times. And, you know, I was on Brendan Schaub's show one time, but having these people who are in your corner is great. But how I view it is, when you're in the ring, you have a lot of people in your corner, but you're the only one in that ring. And so you can't rely on all of those people to push you forward. I mean, it is cool if they do, but that's on them. That's their option and their ability. They can do that if they want. But at the end of the day, it's up to me to be in that ring. It's up to me to win that particular fight. And so I try not to put anything else on anyone else. You know, that weight is on me. That's the job I chose. This is the career path that I've gone down. People seem to respect what I have to say. Some don't, but that's okay. But people seem to be at least receptive to the idea of what I'm doing. And so all I can do is just keep laying the brick, man. And eventually I can make the impact that I want. And that impact will be whenever we look at like a martial arts fraud or a con man, they never work again. You know, I'm baffled. One, I'm grateful for the fact that I've been able to been given this platform, because all I've ever wanted to do in my life since I started martial arts was to make an impact in the world. That's what I wanted to do. And this is how I wanted to do it. I didn't know that McDojo Life was going to be that, but it has become that. And it seems like it would be, I guess you could say, selfish of me to try to put that burden on anyone else. You know, that it's a burden at the same time as it is cool. Don't get me wrong. I love this job. Like, I love my job, right?
And you're doing a great job.
I'm trying, at least, you know, but it comes with burden. It comes with death threats. It comes with people looking up to you to do the right thing. It comes with people bringing you information all the time of some of the sickest, grossest things I've ever seen in my life. And that's just in the small space of martial arts. You know, like, I would hate to deal with this thing, anything outside of martial arts, because I'm sure it gets way grosser. But, you know, I just hope that I can help people. That's all I want to do with this. I just want to help people.
Before we recorded this episode, I sent you two links, two videos from a guy here in Germany. Now, I'm sure everybody who's listening right now here in Germany get a little bit scared. But I don't want to talk. I don't want to name. I don't want to did a name drop on this guy. I'm sure when we talk about this dude right now, a lot of people know who I'm talking about. So this is an old man who brought the Wing Chun back in the 80s here to Germany and Europe. And as I mentioned before to you, before this episode, some of my friends who are legit martial artists said that he was very good in what he did in his teaching and his stuff. He wrote a book also, but nowadays he comes up with those videos pushing those, let's say, energy fields, or pushes the guys away. Yeah, the students came, for me it looks like it's kind of clan sometimes of a cult. Looks like a cult. And you saw that video, you said, yes, before you just saw him before I showed you these videos. What are your thoughts about him?
From what I can tell in the videos anyway, he's practicing something called push hands, which is usually a drill done by people who do Tai Chi. You can see people who do Wing Chun do it. Typically when you do Wing Chun though, it's usually what's called Chi Sao. And Chi Sao is like sticky hands. So you kind of keep your hands in a very specific place on each other's arms and you kind of just kind of flow into techniques, but you try to keep your hands connected. Chi Sao in Wing Chun is a really cool drill. But at the end of the day, that is all that it is a drill. The stuff that you showed me is definitely push hands, which I'm actually surprised because, I mean, they kind of rhyme a reason, I guess. But at the same time, it's kind of like this ego trip to show the master's power and his prowess. He shows off that he's a very frail old man. He shows his muscles in a very funny way. And then all of a sudden he makes jokes. But then he brings up this dude that looks like all he does is lift weights and eat steroids. And then he's like shoving the dude across the room, you know? It's nonsense. I mean, come on. Like, that's cool. It's a beautiful thought to think that as you get older that you could develop these powers. But think about the recent UFC. I'll use that as an example. And I'm not saying that UFC is a street fight, but I'm saying it is a very close resemblance to what a hand-to-hand combat situation will be. And when you look at that and you look at somebody like Glover Teixeira, Glover Teixeira just won the light heavyweight title at 42, becoming the second oldest UFC champion ever. The only person who's ever been able to beat that was 45 years old, and that was Randy Couture, right? 45 is the oldest UFC champion that we have ever seen. Yet this guy looks like he's in his 60s and he's knocking people around in their 20s. That is a lie. That is a con. As we get older, we have to know some facts. We are not going to be the old master on the hill. It's not a kung fu movie. We're not going to be Pai Mei like in Kill Bill and whacking people on the head with sticks and running across rooftops because we're 60. What's going to happen is you're probably going to have to go to the bathroom like 5 or 6 times a night. You're going to have a hard time sleeping. You might need to take a baby aspirin to make sure that your blood pressure's right. Maybe stuff like that. But at the end of the day, you're getting older. Your body cannot do the things that it used to be able to do. So when you look at this from a logical perspective, having this old man throwing people across the room with his inner power and technique is a lie. It is another martial arts con that has been perpetuated by movies and film. But people eat it up. And then, just so you know, I'm sure that at least one person who knows who we're talking about will be like, hey, man, I was there. I saw it. I felt it. No, you were taken advantage of. that's different. And the person who's listening will never believe that, because that's not how a con or a cult works. The only person who can get out of a cult is the person themselves. They have to be willing to understand that they could be wrong, right? They could be wrong. And hey, I could be wrong. But then again, I'm willing to say, I'll fight that old dude. Like, okay, let's prove it. Do that to me.
His title is Grandmaster. He's a Grandmaster. The Grandmaster, is it more that his ego is hurting? So for that,
you have
to be a Grandmaster and tell, okay, I'm old. My students are now stronger and better than I. This is for me. It's the greatest master of all times. If you are a master and you get old and you said, now I trained my students that they are better than me now.
Well, that's how it should be, isn't it? As martial artists, I would hope that if you become an instructor, your ultimate goal is to make better students than you ever were. And you know who's a really good example of that, by the way, is John Donahue. John Donahue, his students, the proof is 100% in the pudding. You look at Gordon Ryan, right? You look at the Donahue Death Squad in general, and you think about how John Donahue was able to create these absolute animals on the mat in very short time, by the way. I mean, Nicky Rod, you know, he's been yoking up black belts since I think he was like a blue belt or maybe purple belt, because he has a good instructor. An instructor who takes that ego and leaves it off to the side whenever he's teaching his students, because he doesn't care if his students are better than him. He wants that. He wants his students to be better. And I think any good martial arts instructor worth his weight would want that. There is no secret technique. Doesn't exist. That's bullshit. Any instructor who's like, you'll learn that later, is an asshole. Just an asshole. Like, what, you're going to learn this magical technique that I'm paying you to learn? Like what, when I'm in my 70s as well, when it never is going to be used at all? Because when I'm in my 70s, I can't actually defend myself. You know, like this perpetuated nonsense of this hierarchy that these people give themselves is absolutely astonishing. You know, this guy calls himself Grandmaster, right? Why did you need the grand part? Like, couldn't you just be a master and like, that's still good enough? Like, you know, or like, there's a guy named Dale Brown I call out all the time because he's a huge kook. He's a fraud. He's a shyster. He's a con man. But, you know, when I look at this dude, he calls himself Commander Dale Brown. And I think, well, who are you commander of? Like your own organization? So you give yourself a title of commander? Like, dude, you can just be Dale Brown. That's okay.
I guess some people need that for their ego.
Oh, dude, it's 100% ego. And you know what's really funny, especially about somebody like him, is that he had all these fantastic martial artists, like world-class martial artists. Navy SEALs called them out. I know because, again, I'm sponsored by a Navy SEAL company, and I know that those people called him out. You know, guys like Tim Kennedy called him out. You know, Tim Kennedy is, believe it or not, one of the nicest dudes when it comes to this, because I asked him to be in our documentary, and he was like, you know, like maybe we got it wrong, and I don't want to ruin their business because maybe we get it wrong. And so but he had no problem calling this dude out. Who else? Michael Bisping called him out. Henner Gracie laughed at this dude, the nicest dude in jiu-jitsu. You know, keep it playful. Henner Gracie was like, yo, I don't know about all that. You know, but all these world-class martial artists called him out. And rather than taking that opportunity to say, you know what, maybe I'm wrong, maybe I should look at what they're saying and just fix those issues and teach better martial arts technique, this is an opportunity to be on a world stage, to have all these multi-class champions talk to me about what I need to do better. Take that to heart. That would cost you millions of dollars to go to each one of those seminars and to be able to take all of their classes and get all those private lessons to learn all those techniques correctly. You're getting it for free, and you're going to ignore them and block them and laugh at them and think they're wrong. That is 100% ego. So I imagine that, like, this old guy, right, probably gets called out quite a bit. It's okay to get called out. Have a conversation.
I wrote him, and he don't want to talk with me. I mean, I invited him to make an episode over Wing Chun, and he said, no, I don't have to explain. Everybody can come and visit me and in my school, in my dojo. And he don't want to explain. He don't want to talk. I mean, I legit want to talk with him about Wing Chun. I don't want to play him in front of the audience. I don't want to exhaust him. I just want to talk with him about Wing Chun, because he was the one person who brought Wing Chun to Germany.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, I personally, I don't want anybody to misunderstand me. I actually don't have a problem with Wing Chun. Like, as a whole art, you know, it's got history. It's got this beautiful story of how it started. It's, you know, it's got some things that are in every martial art. You know, the idea of centerline theory is in almost every martial art. The idea of Pak Sao, Lop Sao, pulling hand, pushing hand, those are in almost every martial art. Vertical fist punching is very handy when in a close range. You know, there are some really good nuggets of information in there. Bong Sao, Tong Sao. Like, there's a lot of stuff in Wing Chun that is applicable to other things that you do, especially, by the way, when you're in close and someone's in your guard and you're fighting for grips and you have to actually feel what's going on and move their hands in a certain direction. Like, if you're good at trapping, that's very handy, by the way. But at the end of the day, is it a complete martial art? No, I don't think any martial art, none of them are complete. None of them are complete. That's the thing. Why do you think that in MMA, there's not one guy who just does one martial art ever? Ever again, anyway, because we already went down that path and realized that that's not the way to go. You know, even jiu-jitsu, once jiu-jitsu, people started figuring out, man, these wrestlers are doing well. And how many wrestlers, by the way, have become world champions? Well, a lot, a fuckload. And if I remember correctly, I think the majority of people who have won belts had backgrounds in wrestling. And so, you know, is there one dominant art to do everything? No, but people will tell you that. Anybody who does martial arts will automatically tell you that their martial art is the best martial art. Because if to them it wasn't, they wouldn't do that martial art, you know? But what the truth is in the middle. That's the best martial art for you and your personal goals. If you want to lose weight, you might go to a cardio kickboxing class. Will you learn to be the best fighter on the world? No, but will you lose weight? Yes. Yeah, so it meets your personal goals. If you love culture and you love to dance, and you want to learn about that culture and you decide to go to capoeira and you learn about this beautiful art that's steeped in this rich culture and music and instruments and dance, that might help you reach your goals. Will you be the best fighter in the world? Probably not, but you're reaching your goals. If you want to learn to choke fools unconscious, maybe you go to jiu-jitsu, maybe you go to sambo, maybe you learn wrestling and you want to learn how to pin and be dominant. But everybody has their own goals. There is no one answer. And that's the funniest part, is everyone thinks they have the answer. It's kind of like the religious question.
Yeah.
Everyone thinks they're right about religion. But the truth is none of us really know until we die. You know, that's how do you know? Well, you got to die. Well, fuck, I don't want to do that. All right. Well, I guess you'll have to win.
Yeah, but you're right. You're right. Rob, do you have any advice for people listening right now? And the last question I have for you, can give any advice to avoid a McDojo worldwide?
Well, yeah, like, I guess it kind of goes along with what I was just saying, but I'll just tell you what I think is the best way to go about selecting a good dojo. There are red flags everywhere, and everybody's going to tell you this or that, and even me. Don't listen to me, all right? Listen to you. Listen to your common sense. So it's very simple. One, you need to know what your goals are. The average martial artist drops out between a year and a year and a half. That's standard. Most people who ever do martial arts ever drop out at about a year or a year and a half. You hear this in jiu-jitsu a lot. They call it the blue belt blues, but it also happens in every other martial art, not just jiu-jitsu. So it's pretty standard that if you join, you're probably going to leave. But I think the reason is because most people don't set themselves up for success. They don't set up clear, attainable goals that you could reach along the way. They go, well, I want to strike. That's not a real goal. You're going to get that anyway. All right. What are you going to get with that? You know, did you want to lose 10 pounds? And then you want to, you know, you want to have a better cholesterol level. You want more self-defense. You want to be a competitor. You want to win that tournament. You want to get that gold medal. Real attainable goals that you can reach. Those are important. After you figure out what your personal goals are, which could be anything from learning self-defense to getting a friend, to getting a mentor, to losing weight, to being more mentally healthy, to having an outlet, to not selling drugs, to not doing drugs. This could be a billion things, right? But then you find that goal. Okay, that's what I want. All right, well, that's your short-term goal. What's your mid and your long-term goal? Now, what you're going to do is you're going to go out and you're going to find martial arts schools that are most likely going to set you up for success with your goal. For instance, if you're looking to lose weight, maybe you should do martial arts that are going to be a little more physically intensive to help you with that. Right? Like, I'm not saying that kata is not going to help you, but I'm saying in the long run, you should probably do things that are more physically exerting. So that way you can lose that weight the way you want. So Then you're going to seek those schools out and you're going to do two trial classes, whether they're free or paid, a week for a month. So that will be 8 different martial arts schools that you get to observe, take the class, and not worry about your body falling apart because you're trying to cram too much in a week. Do a trial class on a Monday, do another trial class on a Friday or Saturday, and then do it again the next week. Then do it again the next week and then the following week. After you gathered all this information, talk to the instructors, make sure that you like them, make sure that you do your research on them, which is very easy because we all have Google. Type in their name, see if they have any priors, if there's any articles about them for raping people or anything like that. And then pick the school that's going to help you meet your goal. It's that easy. People want to make it so much harder. Oh, well, these people require uniform. What a McDojo. Yeah, okay, well, that's dumb. What about every sport on the planet requires you to have a uniform? Like, but all of a sudden, when it comes to martial arts, it's a McDojo. No, it's not. It's standard in every other sport, right? That doesn't mean they're not going to teach you well. You know, people look down upon franchise schools, which is also really stupid because franchise schools are small businesses run by individuals. So if you go there, even though it's a franchise, you might get a great instructor. You know, you can't just rule them out because they're a part of a franchise because they don't want to be poor, because they don't want to be broke and homeless, right? That's not bad, you know? So that's my advice. Know your goals, find a school that's going to help you reach those goals, and then keep setting new goals because you're not going to be very good if you quit or you don't want to do it.
Beautiful. Rob, I appreciate you took the time to talk with me today. I hope my English was not quite as bad as I
think great, of. Man. English is good.
I have to talk more English with people. I wish you all the best. I hope to see your documentary soon. For everyone who's going to listen right now, follow Rob, follow McDojo Life on Instagram, on YouTube, on wherever you can find it. Facebook needs a little bit. And we hope to see the documentary on Netflix and Amazon. This would be awesome.
Yeah, for sure, man. We're trying so hard. So we were put a lot of work into it. And we really hope that not only can we get the season 1 out, but we really hope we can get season 2 going. But that all will depend on how well season 1 goes. So hopefully everybody will enjoy what we put together on such a small budget. But hopefully everybody will enjoy it.
No, it's a pleasure to talk with you. And for all the listeners right now, take care. And till next week. Bye-bye.